Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, a highly critical review of governance in RTE has blamed weaknesses in risk management and internal controls for the crisis at the broadcaster. The wide-ranging report said these issues directly contributed to the failure to detect issues at the organisation. The review of governance and culture at RTE, which was chaired by Professor Niamh Brennan of UCD, said the risk management had been, quote, immature, under-resourced and hardly considered at all by the board and former executive board. That was one of three reports on the broadcaster published yesterday, with 116 recommendations being made across all three. Now, for more on this, we're joined in studio by Jack Horgan-Jones, political correspondent with the Irish Times, who's been looking at these. On the line by Orla Lenehan, assistant professor in governance at the University of Galway, and Malcolm Byrne, Fianna Fáil senator and member of the Oireachtas Media Committee, who would have been looking at quite a lot of this in the Media Committee when the controversies broke last year. So, Jack, three reports. Where does this leave things for RTE?
Well, in some ways we've learned a lot more. In some ways, the kind of basic fundamentals of the picture that we know about RTE haven't really changed. Just to break it down into a few key takeaways from each report, there was the Brendan McGinty report, which had a lot of the kind of governance and oversight recommendations in there. And there's stuff in there which is kind of stuff we already knew, or recommendations that have been already made or put in train by other bodies or by the government. So bring RTE under the CNAG, some stuff around disclosures around pay, banding of pay for on-air presenters, severance packages, board approval being put in place there, and kind of restructuring, cleaning up the system of staff allowances in RTE. You move on to the Niamh Brennan chaired report, and there's some interesting commentary in there in particular that jumped out at me about the kind of interaction or the overlap between the absence of a stable funding model and the crisis and controversy that unspooled itself from last summer.
She kind of views them as inseparable.
Exactly. She's saying that there's an interaction between the two. She's saying that the absence of a stable funding model led to a culture within RTE of focusing on costs, of cutting on costs, and that what went hand in hand with that is a focus on the top 10, and that she thinks that, and she and her colleagues on the panel feel that that pressure may have contributed to the understating of Ryan Tuberty's earnings and the non-disclosure of the €75,000 payments which went through the barter account. When it comes to the barter account, we had a whole dedicated report, the third of the three that was released yesterday.
The Mazars report.
The Mazars report, which went into this in fine detail and with a fine-tooth comb. Again, you know, I don't think anyone would have woken up yesterday morning prior to the publication of these reports thinking that the governance of the barter account was a paragon of corporate governance. But there's a lot of detail there. There's some new stuff in there around oversight, around structures that
around
were put in place
keeping.
Or not put in place to keep an eye on the barter account. One of the things that jumped out to me, as you say, around record keeping is this this little line in there. In fact, they repeated several times that 3 years of records relating to purchases made on the barter account were just lost. They seem to have been kept only in hard copy, and someone moved office and this hard copy was lost. So that's remarkable. There's also this this suggestion in there, or it's not a suggestion, it's a finding that the internal audit function in RTE didn't actually even know about the barter account. Was never told about it. So they couldn't look into it because they didn't know it was there. So there's this whole kind of, you know, agglomeration of new material, which in the round, I suppose, doesn't fundamentally change that we think about the RTE scandal, but does compound some of the things that we knew already.
And a couple of recommendations, even on the internal audit function, for another external review of the internal audit function. So potentially other reports down the track. To take it back to the funding issue, there'll be no final decision, obviously, until much later on how RTE is to be funded. But in terms of interim funding, what do we know now?
Yeah, so we know there was a funding package, I think, of around 56 million agreed in the budget for last autumn for this year. And some tranches of that are being released, aligned with the acceptance of the findings. And I think another 20 million is being released once they're implemented. So that's the kind of the lifeline funding that's being extended to the broadcaster. And I suspect that there won't be an awful lot of resistance within RTE to implementing the kind of reforms that are being sought in a exchange for that funding. I think that the new Director General, Kevin Backhurst, has already kind of outlined that he's on board with that agenda. Where it gets trickier, I think, is less about, you know, committing to overhauling corporate governance and oversight of RTE and saying in the future everything will be different. I think a post that Kevin Backhurst made on social media himself last night. But where it gets much trickier is that longer term funding model, that political decision that has to be made about how you fund public service broadcasting in Ireland. And what is clear from comments made yesterday by the Minister for Arts and Media, Catherine Martin, and reports over the weekend suggesting there was a kind of hybrid funding model available to the government, she seems to be very much against that. It's clear that there is no consensus at the heart of government about that. And as she said herself yesterday, time is not on her side when it comes to A, making this decision, B, legislating for it, and C, implementing it.
All right, before I go to our other guest, there was news this morning that there's a high-profile departure from the presenter stable in RTE, specifically from 2FM, of Dearan Garrahy, who said she's departing and pursuing her own podcast and other projects. Obviously, presenters' activities will be constrained. There's no clear causal link between it, but the environment has changed for presenters, and it's open to speculation whether the release of three reports yesterday and RTE's commitments had anything to do with this.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a timing issue there. Obviously, we don't know the circumstances around Dearan Garrahy's departure. She is someone who had her knuckles wrapped, I think, for making a piece of social media content in RTE property back, I think, in 2023. But there's no suggestion that that's why she's left or anything like that. I think there's in the round an abstract lesson to be drawn from this, which is that, you know, people who are kind of social media powerhouses or influencers in their own right, they do have alternate income streams available to them. Again, we don't know why Dearan Garrahy left, but I think from RTE's perspective, certainly they need to be aware that people who have, you know, the capacity to earn outside of Montrose itself may be running the rule over their income model and their professional lives in the context of the extra obligations and disclosures and so on that will now go hand in glove with that reform agenda that's in place at RTE.
Right, which are already in place, those kind of guidelines and permissions and constraints in the area of particularly current affairs presenters who have to go through a board for approval for any external activities, whether they're proposed to be paid or unpaid. I just want to go to Orla Lenehan, the Assistant Professor of Governance at the University of Galway. Orla Lenehan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Colm.
On reading through the report by Professor Niamh Brennan and on the group there, do you think that this lays a good pathway to RTE sorting out the issues that were identified as far back as a year ago? And do you agree with her point about the sustainable funding being key to RTE being able to strategically plan to make these changes?
I do, Colm. I agree with the two points. So on the first, I think this is a clear pathway. And what I finally got a sense of last night from these reports was that this was a feeling of finality, a feeling of conclusion. It is the first of the reports where there are clear, hard-cut recommendations. I know a lot of the findings have already been thrashed out in the media in the last few months, but we needed the type of detailed forensic analysis that Professor Brennan and her team undertook in order to understand the context that leads to the recommendations. There are 90 recommendations. A lot of them are directed at the board, so it's over to the board now to implement these recommendations, many of which they will have already started. And I think what's really interesting about this report, which hasn't been mentioned already by your other guests, is that it gives us a great insight into the culture of the organisation. Governance and culture go hand in hand. You cannot have one successful without the other.
One of those really points there seems to be a complete absence of trust between the executive board and the board. The executive board feeling, rightly or wrongly, that the board was an area from which information would leak, so information is effectively kept from the board.
Yes. So what happened was there was a two-way problem here in communication. So you're absolutely right. Management or executives didn't trust the board. And as a result of that, they didn't present information to the board. Professor Brennan is quick to point responsibility at all levels of governance in this report. She also appoints responsibility to the minister in the first place, who didn't address skill gaps on the board and didn't have a proper appointment process. But equally, you know, management didn't give information to the board, but effective governance frameworks are meant to be in place to detect that type of executive behaviour. The lack of trust, that culture where there were silos, no communication, no information being shared, is what directly led to the issues which have arisen. So I do think those recommendations, particularly on culture, I would really, really plead with the board to pay attention to those interesting findings from the staff consultation survey. And work on those. On your other question on the funding model, absolutely. The external regulatory context is what Professor Brennan started the report with. And she has married that external context to the internal governance structure.
Just explain what you mean by that.
So it's like the other guest was saying. So, you know, the external environment is what creates the conditions for internal governance. Now, with good governance is about creating the conditions for effective decisions to be made. If you have a situation where you're in a funding deficit or you're struggling to achieve funding and you're constantly looking over your shoulder to survive, inevitably that leads to decisions like the barter account, maybe being persuaded to try and hide some presenters' fees, and all of these conditions end up leading to ineffective decisions being made. So the funding model is crucial to solving all of these issues.
All right. The audit and risk committee was one area where it was concerned more with audit than with risk. That's a criticism, I think, in Niamh Brennan's report. And better risk management, better forecasting of risk was one of the things that was recommended in this.
Yes, it's interesting, that one, because what the Audit and Risk Committee were doing was focusing on budgeting, financial management issues, but they were paying too much attention to that side of their responsibilities at the expense of, if you like, their core governance responsibility, which is internal control and risk management. Effectively, what was happening was there was no oversight of the internal audit function. A worrying statement in the report was that internal audit was under-resourced, overburdened, and focused disproportionately on compliance rather than actually assuring controls to address the risks. Right. A key recommendation in there for the Audit and Risk Committee to revamp their terms of reference and ensure good governance going forward.
Senator Malcolm Byrne, you're on the Media Committee. You've had RTE in before a number of times to answer questions on how the show is run. So are many of your questions answered in these reports in terms of what RTE has to do in order to put itself on the right track?
I think we are making progress. As Jack would have said, while we did learn more of some of the detail of what was going on in RTE, what we knew already was that there were lax financial controls, that there were issues around poor governance. And what we do have now is we've 116 recommendations coming out of these reports. Government has said to RTE, you have 6 weeks to come back to outline how you are going to implement them. I think in fairness to Kevin Backer, since he's gone in as Director General, there is some progress being made on some of these already in terms of caps on salaries, controls on, you know, potential outside earnings for presenters. There are improvements on the face of it on governance and communication within the organisation. And I think it is critical that this happens, one, to restore morale within the organisation itself. And the Media Committee heard from the staff group of unions 2 weeks ago around some of the challenges faced by staff. But I think more importantly, I would argue, among the wider public, because confidence has been shattered in RTE, but we do need to ensure that we have good quality public service broadcasting in Ireland, particularly never more so now than in the digital environment where misinformation and disinformation is widespread. We need quality good journalism as well as excellent content creation, not just in news and current affairs, but in drama, art, sport, children's programming, and so on. So,
sorry to interrupt you there, but the 6 week time frame, it seems long on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's quite tight. The National Union of Journalists had a statement yesterday saying that some of the aspects of the McGuinty report on terms, conditions, allowances, pay bans, all of those kind of things would have to be subject to consultation and negotiation with trade unions. They're not exactly swift processes. And then all this has to provide the basis, presumably, for a decision to be made by government sometime in July. So, I mean, there's a kind of a deadline of yesterday on all of this, isn't there?
There is, but even in terms of any of the decisions around the future funding model, the deadline was yesterday. When Kevin Backhurst came before our committee, you know, he said, look, judge me on the basis of results. And I think, you know, if anyone looks at the approach that the Director General has been taking and the members of the new board, and you don't have to be happy with everything that they're doing, but the general direction in terms of reforming RTE, I think we have seen moves. And certainly, you know, the recommendations that are there, I mean, what RTE has to come back and sort of say is, look, we accept all 116. Some of them are already being implemented. There are others we can work on. And yes, there obviously has to be around stuff like terms and conditions with staff. There have to be negotiations with the union. But it's around the
direction. Is there agreement? Is there agreement in government? Will there be agreement in government over the next 6 weeks over what the funding model will look like? Is it make your mind up time there as well?
Well, it is make your mind up time. I mean, I think there's certainly differences of opinion around what funding model should be pursued. There is agreement across the board that decision now has to finally be reached. My own view, and I share the view that was expressed by the Future Media Commission that was chaired by Breen McGrath and reported 2 years ago, is that we do need to move towards a publicly funded model of public service broadcasting in Ireland, managed by an arm's length body. Commission, the MAN, is ideally placed to do that because it already manages the Sound and Vision Fund, which takes up 15% of the licence fee anyway. But the time for debate and discussion around the various options is over. Government has to make a decision one way or the other.
Okay.
Because it feeds into, I mean, there's a much broader question around the future of media in Ireland and how can we ensure in the first hand that quality Irish content continues to be created.
Okay,
and then we address misinformation and disinformation.
Okay, finally and briefly to you, Jack Horgan-Jones, if it is make your mind up time, are you clear as to what at this stage is the agreed position of government on the funding model this far out from July?
Yeah, there isn't one.
Supposed to be made.
There isn't one. I mean, Malcolm said that the time for debate is over on the future funding model. I think, unfortunately, at the very highest level of government, the time for debate is just beginning. And it's another thing that has to be sandwiched into that very tight time frame. I mean, on the one hand, you have Catherine Martin, who I think at this stage we can say is clearly of the view that direct exchequer funding is the way to go. And at the other end of the spectrum, you have the two Treasury ministers, the Minister for Finance and the Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform, both of whom are against it. And perhaps more importantly than that, the Taoiseach and Micheál Martin, who has been out on this early and often saying he doesn't think it's the way to go. So how do you form a consensus from those two camps, particularly when one of the camps, Catherine Martin, was out yesterday saying this hybrid model, which kind of picks and chooses from the two models on offer. She said that, you know, that you can end up with the worst of both worlds. She said that hasn't been presented to her as an option, very much downplaying this as a suggestion.
Okay, well, 6 weeks is a long time in politics and indeed in RTE. My thanks to Senator Malcolm Byrne, Dr. Orla Lennon from the University of Galway and Jack Horgan-Jones from the Irish Times.